Good bourbon creates new friendships that last forever, and good bourbon creates legendary stories.
What's up, y'all? Texas Whiskey Crew back with some special guests, but let's start off first. My name's Steve.
I'm Dave.
I'm Nick.
And who do we have with us here today? First off...
Nancy Garrison.
And?
I'm Nancy Garrison.
I'm Queen Bee.
There you go.
You know, we found these two out on the street wandering around when we're getting ready to do this episode. And we said, hey, do you want to join us for a podcast?
Do you like whiskey?
And talk to us. And turns out, look at that. It all worked out. No, honestly, thank y'all for making the trip over here. Actually, hanging out with us in our studio here, it's been... been a kind of a long time running since we've had different guests and doing things. We've done a lot of things in the past, but this is an exciting episode for us because for most of us here, and as you can see on Nick's shelf back here too, we love Garrison. We love Texas whiskey in general, but Garrison is probably my favorite. And I know it's Dave's
favorite. Definitely my favorite in the Texas genre. So I catch a little grief from some people, but super excited to have you guys here. And
thanks, y'all.
Thank you.
I get yelled at because we did a little episode early on and we were talking about daily drinkers and what's your favorite daily drinker. And nobody said price limit. So I was like, all right, well, my favorite daily drinker is Balmori. And I mean, I caught all kinds of things.
Because none of us are ready to,
But that's, if I'm going to drink something and that's the only thing I want to drink,
it, you're going to drink one thing.
Enjoy the heck out of it.
We're actually exploring new ad headlines. And one of the headlines somebody came up with it. I'm not sure who came up with it, but it says, look, I can afford to drink it. So I drank it. Yeah. I thought that was kind of cute.
Yeah. That's a great tagline. Yeah. So. You know, I want to jump into this and find out more about y'all. We do our best to preach the brand out there, to tell everybody how good you are, but nothing says it better than coming from the folks that started it from day one. So, either one of y'all, I'll open it up to this. So how does this happen? How did y'all break into deciding to open a distillery?
There's lots of good stories behind it. There's always good stories behind bottles of bourbon whiskey. But the reality is that I was working in the software industry in Austin, Texas, and my company went belly up when Enron went belly up. And I was out of work for 2 or 3 years, and Nancy was supporting the entire family. And I was an embarrassed stay-at-home dad and decided to take up a hobby of running marathons while the kids were at school. And so I was being, when I look back on it, it was kind of a selfish thing to do. You know, you're spending 12 hours training every single day, and she has to come home from work and take care of the kids on top of the fact that I'm not bringing bread into the household. So what do you like to do was the question I think she asked. And I said, I like to drink bourbon whiskey. And she actually, back in the old days, she used to give me for like my birthday present, she'd give me a Christmas present, a big stocking, Christmas stocking with a couple of bottles stuck down in it and a couple of cans of Diet Coke or Coke, whatever I was drinking at the time.
Yep.
Back when you could drink that shit. And so she was
my, how the palate has advanced.
She was supportive of my habit in a weird sort of way.
Yeah.
But
you were reading an article one day, you know, I mean, craft distilling was at its birth. I mean, it really was
it was just happening.
Barely.
What year was this when all this was coming into fruition?
2001, 2, and 3.
Yeah. Okay. In the early 2000s.
That's when I wrote the business plan. And then I went, did my first trip to Kentucky in 2003. We came back and bought our land. There's some debate between when the land was actually purchased. It was 2004, 2005.
It all started with that, you know, there was some vodka distilling going on. And Texas being the entrepreneurial kind of state you are, of course you'd expect some people out there trying to start craft, start distilling. Tito was doing Tito's thing. I mean,
Paula's Texas Orange.
You know, and he was like, I just don't get it. I mean, you know, it takes a substantial investment. We didn't know how much. And, but you know,
I was ribbing her too, because she talked a lot about it.
And you know, like Cosmopolitans. I mean, you know, I could, you know, enjoy. I mean, I'm a Texas girl. I really enjoy tequila. But nonetheless, I mean, I was on trend like all other great females were at the time. And I said, well, you know, you're kind of whining about that there's another vodka distillery coming online. And yeah. why don't you go figure out how to do it? You know, you drink a hell of a lot of that stuff, that brown spirit stuff. So, you know, maybe we'd save some money along the way. That didn't happen. But nonetheless, that seemed to give Dan a free pass.
It's been a great ride. You know? Greatest job in the world. We get to travel all over the country doing beautiful golf tournaments in Los Angeles and West Palm Beach, Florida. Mm-hmm. And we sit inside the tents that we rent out and serve people samples all afternoon and get to know people. And it's been the bourbon magic is everywhere. Bourbon, we have a philosophy that bourbon can change the world. Good bourbon can bring you closer to man and God. Good bourbon creates new friendships that last forever. And good bourbon creates legendary stories. And we repeat that over and over and over again because it's true. Mm-hmm. Great little story. Can I segue to a story?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
This happened in Naples, Florida. We're at a Shula Steakhouse. Mm-hmm. And we're in there because Nancy has this fetish for... craving for steak fries, you know, the big old plank steak fries.
Yeah, anybody out there who has a great steak fry, you just let me know.
They do them really well at Shula's, and we're sitting at the bar having drinks, and the bartender's putting out Garrison Brothers. Two over there. And then these two guys over one table order two Cowboys.
Cowboys.
And I'm like, shit, man, that's like $140 a glass here. How can they afford that? And I said, you know what? Let me carry those out to the table. Mm-hmm. And I walked out there, and I set them down. I said, I just want to tell you guys thanks because you're buying my bourbon. That's Garrison Brothers Cowboy Bourbon. I'm Dan Garrison. That's my wife over there stuffing fries down her throat. and I said, thank you so much for doing this. I said, well, we've been drinking bourbon since your bourbon, specifically your bourbon, for 5-10 years. We love the stuff. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh my God. Shit, this is happening in Naples, Florida.
Yeah. Awesome.
And the first trip I've ever been to Naples, Florida.
But it gets better.
It gets better because she was bitching at me while I was up at encouraging me when I was up at the bar to get my knee looked at because I was going to have a knee replacement surgery.
Back to that whining thing.
And so this guy says, I said, well, what do y'all do? He says, well, I'm a surgeon. I do hips and knees. And I went, really? And I look over at Nancy because she wants me to get a second opinion, right? Yep. Before going to the surgery. And I said, well, can I come back to Florida sometime and meet with you and go to your clinic and maybe you could examine me and do some x-rays and see if you think, you know, robotic surgery is the answer to the question. And he said, what are you doing right now? I said, nothing. He said, go in the private room and take your pants off.
Okay, that's sketchy in and of itself, but.
So I said, I'll be right back to Nancy. Went in the private room, took my pants off, and Nancy goes, what the hell is going on? She peeks her head in there, and there's this guy down on his knees feeling my knees. Weird. But it was the best damn surgery, and I got it done quickly.
Yeah.
Wow. And I probably got it done at a huge discount because this guy actually invented the company that makes the knee transplant.
Wow. Yeah. So can good bourbon change the world? Well, if nothing else, it can change Dan Garrison's life.
And legendary stories.
And legendary. Yeah. Always a legendary story.
And I had a great leg, so this was a pretty
good. And I think that's kind of what, at least where my love for it came from, was I can't think of many things that bring people together outside of bread or outside of food that bring people, no matter where you are, politically, religion, whatever it is, as long as you're not prohibited to drink, bourbon brings people together and allows people to have conversations that they wouldn't have been able to have outside of that.
Yeah.
Right. And I just, you know, I think it's a powerful thing. I mean, and there's such a story to tell with each bottle, with everything you've started to tell us about it, and like the time that goes in and the age in the barrel and how much life has passed for all of us as this is happening. It's just hard not to love it. I mean,
well, thank you very much. You know, part of what we were, maybe even just a mission and just we were passionate about is the spirit in of itself and the rich history and heritage of this spirit, that those legendary stories are still very much a part of the fabric of what bourbon whiskey is. But it was getting lost again, when we started the distillery, we literally built it from the ground up from a piece of dirt and bought a piece of dirt and built a building on top of it. with the understanding that we could revive this this story, because bourbon was pretty sleepy back in the day. It was not the spirit that anyone was talking
that
about.
We're surrounded by today.
You know, it was not a collector's item per se. You know, there were 9 distilleries with 35 brands on a shelf, and that was about it.
Yeah. I mean, clear spirits just, had really dominated it.
So, you know, to be able to be a part of that chapter to hopefully bring some of this back into the fabric of what an American spirit really is, and to shine that light on it, is something that we're really proud of.
That's, you know, that's awesome. I love to see the passion in this, and I want to take you a couple steps back because you said a couple things that got me thinking.
Yeah.
There's something I tell my boys on a regular basis. I have 2 young boys, and I try to tell them as they're struggling through something or if something's hard to do when you start it, that you're going to fail 3 times before you actually get it. And I think that's a valuable lesson. And from what I know about you and what I've heard, I think you're the poster child for that. You know, and that's kind of where
you should have, would have failed.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's perseverance, but you stuck with it and you created this beautiful product. I mean, everything about it, from the bottle up to the distillery to y'all's personalities. I mean, everything's fantastic with it. But can you enlighten me a little bit on what it took to not just give the hell up and say, screw this, I'm going to find something else to do?
I can give you a couple of examples. They're all going to be stories. That's all right.
Oh, yeah. We have plenty of time.
Vignettes about the growth of the business. I decided that Florida was a key market for us, and I wanted to go to Florida. Mm-hmm. And I went down to Jacksonville, and I picked the same weekend that the PGA Golf Tournament Championship is on. Mm-hmm. So all the bars are empty. Everybody's out on the course. The entire town's out on the course. And I couldn't get a bartender's attention or a beverage director's attention to save my life. And on the 5th day of the trip, I've probably blown $3,000 on hotel expenses and Ubers and everything, trying to get to anybody to drink my bourbon at these bars. But all the kids were working the bars because the managers were out on the course. And I stumble into this one bar called the Fish Camp in Jacksonville. And I sit down at the end of the bar. I'm looking behind the bars. I always do to see if they have any bottle of Garrison Brothers. Not a single bottle of Garrison Brothers. I get down to the end of the bar. Oh, there's a bottle of Blanton's. Oh, thank God. And so I sat down, and the sweet young kid behind the bar said, what you drinking? And I said, I'll have a double Blanton's with a splash of club soda on it. He said, you want to put club soda on Blanton's? And I said, I want to put club soda on Blanton's because I'm thirsty. And he goes, well, good choice. It's great bourbon. And I said, yeah, I think so too. And he said, well, what are you doing in town? And he said, you picked a strange weekend to come drink in Jacksonville. And I said, you know, I was trying to sell bourbon. I make bourbon whiskey in Texas, and it's really good, but I can't seem to get anybody's attention this week. I'll have to come back another week, and I'll have to do a little more pre-planning as to who I need to meet with, because there's got to be...
I mean, this is back in the day.
There's got to be a pyramid structure somewhere. It's like 2015. You always find where the bowling pins are. And it always takes the strangest thing to figure that out when you go into a market. And this kid says, what are you doing tomorrow? And I said, I'm flying out in the afternoon. And he goes, well, you know, would you like to have lunch with my dad? And I said, sure. This kid's like 22 years old. And I had a bottle of bourbon in my bag, of course. I'm always carrying a bottle of bourbon. And he said, all right, well, meet us at such and such fish camp, because it turns out there's like 9 of them. And his dad owns all of them. And I go meet his dad, and we have lunch. He buys my lunch. He says, give me a taste. I said, sure, no problem. And this is just when we had small batch. We didn't have single, we didn't have the whole library of bourbons.
Yeah, we didn't have the collection.
Mm-hmm. And he tries it. He said, damn, son, I'll put it in all my stores. And I went,
boom. Oh, my goodness.
And it turns out he's the bowling pin for the entire city of Jacksonville and the entire restaurant and bar community of Jacksonville.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, the next time I went to Jacksonville, I saw it everywhere. Because he'd been talking about it. Yeah. He was probably a member of a whiskey club or a whiskey society. Maybe he had his own podcast. Who knows? But he was the bowling pin that we needed to knock over that market.
Got to get lucky.
That's the perseverance and absolutely, you know, a little luck mixed in doesn't hurt at all. But to just have that conviction and be able to sit out there and have the conversation and say, here, this is what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. Want people to taste it. I know it's good.
Can I do another story?
Sure.
Yeah. 2016. I'm in Harlem in New York City, and there's a big packaged goods store up in Harlem. It's like a warehouse store. And I'm in there meeting with the manager. I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be a total waste of time because he's got 2,000 different bottles of bourbon whiskey on the shelf, and they're all discount stuff. There's no, everything, that there's like 10 bottles that are locked in the glass case of death, you know? And I'm thinking, I'm going to end up in the glass case of death because I'm over $79 a bottle in New York City. And I'm thinking, this is a total waste of time. And I look down at my phone, and there's a name on the phone. Someone's calling me. And I turned to my rep, Joanna Glass, and I said, I got to go. I'll be back in a minute. And I stepped outside.
It wasn't my name.
I stepped outside and I said, Mr. Trone, David Trone, the founder of Total Wine & More. Mm-hmm. I said, Mr. Trone, what can I do for you? He said, well, do you know who I am? I said, yes, sir. I know exactly who you are. And he said, well, here's what I want to do. I want to make a discount bourbon, though, go in all my 200 stores across the country. And it, we'll put the Garrison Brothers name on it. And we'll put a special brand release just for Total Wine & More stores. And he said, make it like two-year-old bourbon. I said, you wait 2 years for me to get you this brand, this expression? He said, I'll wait as long as you need me to. And I said, okay, how about 25? He said, well, I'm not going to wait that long. I said, that's how long it's going to take me to create a special brand that goes in your store. And he said, well, what's it going to cost? And I said, first of all, I'm not putting my name on it unless it's well over $100 because we're making the best bourbon in the world. That's our mission, is to make the highest quality, finest tasting bourbon in the world. And Mr. Trone, I know you're a badass and I know you have a lot of power in this industry, but I am not going to deprecate my brand for your stores just to get on the shelf there. And he said, okay, well, got any other things in mind? And I said, yeah, we're about to introduce our single barrel bourbon. Mm-hmm. We were not about to introduce our single barrel bourbon, but I'm just winging it. And I said, how would you like to be the first retailer in America to carry Gary Garrison Brothers single barrel bourbon whiskey? Mm-hmm. Because I got 200 barrels that I can have ready tomorrow. And he said, Brian, send a barrel to every single one of my stores. Yeah. And all of a sudden the store managers from each store start flying into High Texas, selecting their own custom.
And they're an amazing partners of ours today. I mean, the relationship between Garrison Brothers and Total Wine & More is outstanding. And they still today carry a Garrison Brothers single barrel.
$1.4 million sale done in a McDonald's parking lot that set us on course for them to become 22% of our business here 16 years later. So it's
awesome. Such a great foundation for the business. I mean, that's, you know, as you step into these things like that, it seems like things snowball after that. I mean, you just got to find the right door to open and go in. But gosh, I love that you just walk into all these things. It's pretty amazing. You get your knee fixed in a...
It's kind of the story of Dan's life.
Did you sell anything in Harlem? How did the rest of that meeting?
We
did.
A couple of cases.
Yeah.
I mean, look at her.
And even today.
I walked into her life just selling
Or I walked into his, one of the two.
And I noticed you also put a lot back into the property, too. The new Rick House Yard, doing the whole, what you call it, your main center that you're going to have people coming to.
So we just finished the dance hall, which is the big one where we want to throw a big party someday. Mm-hmm. And then that one, we've got the whole banner on the side that says Good Bourbon Can Change the World.
Mm-hmm. Which is beautiful. When he says big, we're talking about like football field big.
My favorite image was taken from a drone, and the drone was up like 2,000 feet.
Yep.
And there's an 18-wheeler coming by the place right at the same time. And you see the comparison. This is an 18-wheeler carrying 300 barrels, empty barrels of bourbon that we're going to fill. Yep. And it goes right past the banner. And I was like, that's cool.
Makes
a statement. So we're about to complete the visitor center. We're literally in the last week of the punch list on the visitor center. The visitor center, 32,000 square foot barn that'll hold 14,400 barrels. And it's already a quarter full and it'll be full in a year and a half. So
what we realized is that, you know, I mean, not only is Texas thirsty, but the United States is rather thirsty too. So we needed to make more bourbon. And, but we had to have a place to put all that bourbon. And those barrels take space. So we had to get increase our capacity, through our production side of it, but we also had to build another barn to house all those barrels. So
you brought
we're pretty excited.
You brought up barrels, which is a great caveat to where I want to go with this.
Yeah.
So, for those of you that don't know, it's truly hot as hell or close to here in Texas. Our climate in the summertime is absolutely miserable for the most part.
Yeah.
Y'all, I've been to hell. Yeah. You're right.
Y'all figured out a way.
Happy bourbon.
To make
happy bourbon.
Bourbon work without, you know, losing all of it out the barrels. Well, and
on some occasions.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to jump into that. Was there a situation?
We have a lot of angels that have been drinking a lot of bourbon.
So how did you figure out what barrel to use? And did you have struggles when you started this with this heap?
Another story?
Another story.
Yes.
I went to one of the first American Craft Spirits Association conferences and one of the first ADI conferences, American Distilling Institute, because I was one of the founders of both of those organizations back in the day, along with maybe seven other guys that got together. Chip Tape was part of that organization back in the day, Balcones, if you remember Chip. And I met these guys. The first guy was Russ Karash. And he had a company called Black Swan, and his daughter, Heidi Karash, was the salesperson, and Russ was the mad scientist behind it. And Russ said, he walks up to me one night and goes, "Hey, can I buy you a drink at midnight at a bar?" And I said, "Yeah, this sounds shady. I'm there." And so met him at a bar, and there's Heidi, and he starts pulling out all these little mason jars with White Dog in them. And each of the mason jars was a different color. And I went, "What's that?" And he said, "Using cherry staves, spirals that you carve up and put little lines on them. And I put those in white American oak barrels." And it gives it a little cherry tint. I said, "Okay, well, what's that one?" He said, "That one's made with a rare Amazon tree that you can only harvest if the tribes along the Amazon River allow you to go in and harvest these things." And I'm thinking, this is cool. This is crazy. And then he shows me spiral barrels where he's literally punched holes inside the barrel all the way around. Nobody was doing this shit back then. There was Independent Stave. There was the Barrel Mill. Mm-hmm. They were doing some unique shit, but basically they were just copycatting everybody else did. And I thought to myself, this is cool. And then our barrels exploded.
Well, talk about that for just a second, because, you know, that's a pretty good story about, in and of itself.
Right.
So the first 10 barrels that we bought, we filled them all the way up 100%.
Remember that little thread that we didn't know what we were doing?
In December.
Trial by fire.
Yeah.
Okay, it was 40 degrees. So as soon as you fill it up, it shrinks a little bit because it's so freaking cold. But as soon as we hit April and we had our first 100 degree day, pop, 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 staves just start popping because pressure inside had built up. And I went, figured it out.
We can't buy the same barrels that everyone else is buying. We've got to go out and create our own.
I called Russ Karash and I called the guys at Barrel Mill in Louisville, Kentucky. And I said, "I need to do something totally different, what nobody else is doing." Mm-hmm. And remember, there's only 9 bourbon distilleries in America at this point in time, and they're all buying from 3 cooperages. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
And they've all been doing it the same way for generations.
150 years,
And I said, "I want thicker wood. I want more wood. I want
a different toast and char.
I want honey and beeswax to seal each of the staves around it so that there's no foreign elements coming into it." And they sent me a whole ton of experimental barrels, about 20 of them. And Donis and I went through one by one and we said, "Okay, what are we going to put in here? How thick are we going to fill it? How much liquid are we going to put in it? Are we going to leave 8% headspace? Are we going to 2, 4, whatever?" And we kind of came up with this master testing strategy.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the other big concern for me was, how many people am I going to kill when I actually release this product into the marketplace? Because methanol is poisonous and kills people and makes them blind and can cause cancer.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I've never run a still before. I have no idea how
to start. Was part of the investment strategy, you know.
So
don't kill people.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was a line item.
We've got the barrel research going on over here. And I'm starting to realize that we're getting to know barrels better than anybody else in the industry.
We know
even
barrels.
Even Buffalo Trace.
Because we were studying it, you know, I mean, we were paying attention to it, instead of doing the same old, same old.
And then on the other side, I took 10 empty bottles and I put tape on them that said number 1, number 2, number 3, number 4, number 5, all the way up to 10. And one bottle was filled with Garrison Brothers. One bottle was filled with Garrison Brothers Cowboy Bourbon, which was this experimental idea down the road. Mm-hmm. And then all 8 other bottles were Kentucky bourbons that I had liked or disliked there were even a couple of Tennessee whiskeys in there. And I sent them all to a lab called ACL Labs on the West Coast. And I said, I want you to analyze the alcohol content, but break it down because there's different types of alcohol compounds out there. Tell me how much methanol is in here. Tell me how much ethanol, how much furfural, glycol, oak lactone, vanillin, isoeugenin is in there.
Wow.
Eugenic is in there. That's all the chemicals that come from the wood. So they send it back to me, this whole study. And the thing I'm most worried about is the methanol.
Right.
This methanol is going to poison people. And a couple of trips when I was going to Kentucky, I had a master distiller, I think Elmer T. Lee, and I think also Dave Pickerel said, how hot is it down there?
Yeah, yeah. Said, tell me about that.
So in the summer, it's like 115, 120. He goes, ooh, that could make methanol. That could make wood alcohol, which is a killer. And he said, have you tested that yet? And I said, no. So now I knew I was on the right track. Mm-hmm. When I got the results back, out of every single bourbon that I'd submitted, the two lowest methanol content bourbons were mine.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I went, holy shit, I have figured out what I'm doing.
We have figured out what we're doing.
And and I called Donna Sever and Fred, my other employee at the time, it was just the three of us. And I said, look at these tables. Mm-hmm. And they had these things called spider graphs. And the spider graph printout of the amount of oak lactones coming from the wood for Jack Daniels was like this. But for the Garrison Brothers, it was like this because there was so much more to it. And then I could just look at the color and you're like,
yeah.
So I'm not going
to argue
anybody
with the color.
Very, very few that are the star.
So that was the launching point where it said it's time to go to market.
Yeah.
And
in 2010 is when we released our first bottle of a small batch, you know, which is kind of the core of everything we do. Everything starts with small batch and goes from there. And that was also part of the strategy was not only did we want an incredible, you know, again, a backbone of what our business was going to be, because at Garrison Brothers, we only make bourbon whiskey. That is all we will do. That is all we do do. And we just try to make better bourbon tomorrow than we did today. I wanted you to fix that up.
Trust me. I'm
I feel like I'm on a Friends episode. But, you know, we knew that we had an opportunity to get push that envelope forward.
So in 2010, we released a one-year-old bourbon called the Young Gun. We knew it was young, so we were just going to be upfront about it. This called is the Young Gun. But taste it, because you might
find something in there that
you like. But we knew it was going to be too young to compete with the big brands
of
that
course.
I wanted to compete with.
And it was.
So
honestly.
Fall of 2010, we released a 1.5-year-old. But we still can only say that it's a 1-year-old.
Yeah.
So then next release was on March 2nd, Texas Independence Day of the next year, 2011. And that was almost 1.75 years old. And we kept buying more barrels and investing and investing. This is the same time that our initial investment round with our friends, just friends and family, had come in. And we were able to keep
start pushing,
bearing down and push the limit a little bit.
Yep.
And by 2014, all of our bourbons were 3 years old. Mm-hmm. Every bourbon that we released. Mm-hmm. By 2015, we were looking at more like 3.5. By 2016, 2017,
four-year-old
bourbon minimum.
Yeah, minimum.
And then now we're talking some of the cowboys are 8 to 10 year old barrels, and they're competing with the best.
Well, our Laguna Madre is an 8-year-old at this point.
Mm-hmm. And that's so. That said, I'm a snob about this stuff. So, I'll say it up front. When someone introduces something that's only been aged a year or two, I'm happy to try it. I'll give my opinion on it, but I typically avoid it. I don't buy it. Yeah. My threshold's 4 years.
Yeah.
And I think most bourbon drinkers are. I mean, I think that's kind of...
Well, there's a reality to what the wood of the barrel needs to impart on the liquid inside to...
Flavor profile.
You just can't... you've got to have some rounded complexity to it.
But Texas is very... Texas compared to bourbon is the same as like a bourbon compared to a scotch or like, you know what I mean? Because the way it ages in a barrel in Texas is a lot different than it ages in Kentucky. So that plays a big part.
So we had to overcome concerns from folks like this. And the way we did that was it was two-part. One was swagger in our marketing campaigns.
Sure.
We are Texas.
Expensive, but worth every penny. Mm-hmm. That was one of the original outdoor advertising signs we had. And that still, to this day, that line gets more hits online than anything else that we've ever done. And we also became a socially conscious company. It wasn't just about surviving and get our bourbon in the market and making money off of it. It was about what can we do in the community. We helped rebuild the post office right there in High Texas. Mm-hmm. We started paying for the postmaster general who worked, not the postmaster general, but the postman who worked there. His car blew up, and so we bought him a new car. Mm-hmm. And we did this all with money that was donated by our cult following the old 300, and also from bottlers. When bottlers would come up, we'd say, hey, you guys, we want to do something special today. We'll buy drinks for you down at the Albert Ice House after work. Everybody will pitch in $100 toward a fund for one of our employees that was ill.
Yeah.
And we still kind of do that today. It's a little bit harder because there's so much liability involved in taking care of your team. We just had a young man that had a horrific car accident, and trying to keep track of him. He had insurance, thank God. But he's been hospitalized for quite some time. And in the old days, Nancy and I would have been paying all the hospital bills, but we really can't today because we have liability for the business, and the board does not want us paying for someone who doesn't have health
But
insurance.
We built a community, and you know, volunteer bottling. I mean, you know, literally one day we woke up and said, oh my gosh, we've got this bourbon in these barrels. There are a handful of us here at the distillery. How are we going to all get this done? And so we said, you know, how about a few friends and neighbors? And that's what's beautiful about bourbon. You know, it kind of brings people together. So all of a sudden we said, come in, do some bottling for us.
Briskets.
We'll give you a little breakfast. We'll give you a little lunch. Come in and enjoy, you know, help us out. Give us a hand. Give us a friendly neighborly hand. And, you know, all of a sudden, I think, I don't know how many people we have on that wait list now. It still happens today. You know, it's a lottery system. So if you get called up, we say, pull over to the side of the road, sign up, and then go call your friends and figure out who you can get to come with you. Because, you know, but it's a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's one of the coolest, all three of us have done
coolest things about your story is just, and people will joke, you know, hey, we're tapping into free labor and things like that. But it's really cool.
You know,
we've done it several times. We're on the locals list. So we'll get emails. Hey, you want to come? Yeah, heck yeah, we're doing it. So we'll be up there. Yeah. But I mean, it's just such a neat part of the story.
It is.
So 2016, the wheels came off the truck. Mm-hmm. Because all of a sudden you walked into your local Specs or your local Twin Liquors and you went to the bourbon aisle, and where did all of this shit come from?
Mm-hmm. It's like, a sea of brown spirits.
There's things never heard of.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah.
it was Frederick Remington's bourbon or Winchester's bourbon, and all these names, you're like, don't they make guns? You know,
what?
How'd they get in the bourbon business? And then you realize it's a bunch of rich people in California or New York that realized that we had a pretty good idea, but they didn't have the patience to sit around and wait 5-10 years for the product to get to market. And sure enough, so that it was flooded. And in 2016, sales were shit for us. And
close to bankruptcy.
We were hardly talking to each other because I didn't want to.
Really close.
And she didn't want to say she'd help anymore because she was trying to get her other friends to come in and help us out, and they did. But then
it was tough.
And then something crazy happened in 2017. We were sitting around the bottling table, and we were kind of depressed. We had just let off two people for the first time in our history, the first two people we'd ever let go, and we needed to let them go, but. For financial reasons, but also for personnel reasons. But Hurricane Harvey came rolling across the Gulf of Mexico. And all the bottlers we're all watching the TV and watching the news, seeing where it's going to hit, where they expect it to make landfall. And get a call from my tour manager, Andrea, and she says, we got to do something. We got to fill up the panel truck and take it down to the coast with toilet paper and paper towels and bottles of water.
It's part of our community.
Brothers.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. This is what we wanted to do, is help other Texans that are in trouble. And over the course of 3 days, totally shocked us, but we sold $160,000 worth of bourbon that the customers that are paying $500 a bottle for it, having never tasted it or anything like that, they bought it just to contribute money to Team Rubicon so that Team Rubicon could buy boats to get people off of their rooftops and help them repair their homes. And
we learned something really incredibly
wake up call
about our business, about our community, about the people who were passionate and believing in us that we actually could change the world, that bourbon does bring good people together who want to do good things, and we could harness that. And so that was the beginning.
We're only in about four states there, but we can look at the charts, and Texas sales started going like this. And the other states just stayed flat because they weren't really aware of what was happening at the Hurricane Harvey effort. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing you know, COVID comes around in 2020, and we raise $400,000 for out-of-work bartenders, waiters,
hospitality
servers,
workers.
Hospitality workers. And we did that by offering up Laguna Madre. You can get the first bottle of Laguna Madre, which we're going to release here in 2020. But you have to give $1,000 to the Texas Restaurant Association Relief Fund or to Southern Smoke, which is another relief fund for the industry. And suddenly, and we raised $400,000 by giving bourbon away.
Wow.
Stupid shit way to run a business.
But helping our fellow neighbor, you know.
Absolutely.
Bringing people really together, impactful. People in really in need. And it just, it became very powerful for us, and it became just part of our fabric. You know, Dan and I have always, you know, I'm a multi-generation Texan. So, you know, my family's been in this part of Texas, forever. And the idea that we could actually, through our bourbon, be impactful, became just, again, very powerful for us. And we have, whether it's to the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center for my beautiful Lady Bird bourbon, to Texan Parks and Wildlife Foundation through Balmoray, but also some continued going forward initiatives, you know, Texas Restaurant Foundation. I mean, you know, these are all things that are just very near and dear to what we believe in.
So may I have 2 minutes to announce what's next?
Absolutely.
Sure. Well, and it's still in its infancy.
Yes, it is. We buy a ton of our grain in Texas. All Texas whiskey producers do. We buy grain from the Panhandle. We buy grain from South Texas. Corn, wheat, barley, rye. There's two malting companies that are based up in the Panhandle.
All of our grain at Garrison Brothers comes from Texas farmers. We're 100% Texas produced.
And most of the other Texas producers are as well. And so a friend of mine suggested, hey, why don't y'all do something? Why don't y'all try to raise some money for all the people that have been devastated, their farms and their ranches.
By the Texas wildfires.
Yeah, wildfires. And I said, that is just exactly what we need to do right now. And I brought it to Nancy and my marketing director, Rob, and my director 100%. Of operations. And I thought they were just going to shoot me down.
No.
And no, they didn't. They all said, I like it. And so it's called Panhandle Proud. And we're going to try to launch this as early as next week. Mm-hmm. It'll be a website where you can go and you make a contribution that will go directly to some sort of philanthropy based in the Texas Panhandle in the Amarillo area where all the acreage was burned. Fortunately, it's not all Texas farmers. It's more ranches and rangeland than it was farms. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter. State prices are going to go through the roof later this year because they've already euthanized 8,000 cattle and they're about to euthanize 11,000 more, according to Sid Miller at the Agriculture Commissioner's office. And so I called a meeting of the Texas Whiskey Association, the Texas Distilled Spirits Association. And I said, let's get together and talk about this. And we have had two calls this past week. And everybody on the call said, count us in.
Yep.
We're in.
That's so awesome.
It's going to be really cool. Every distillery is going to do their own event. We created this master menu of 15 pages of here's what you might do over at Milam and Green. Here's what you might do over at Balcones. Here's what you might do here. Because all of them buy Texas grain. Mm-hmm. And they're all fired up about it. And everybody has a connection with somebody who lives in the Panhandle that's a relative or grew up there. And so we're going to do events at all the distilleries, special releases from the distilleries. For example, we might convince Donis to do a high rye made with rye from
No. That is not true. No.
When I leave, I'll give you Donis' phone number.
No. Get Donis.
Just an example. But other distilleries could do the same thing. And we'd call it the Panhandle Proud expression.
Yeah.
And we're not trademarking it. Everybody can use that term Panhandle Proud. We hope to have the Panhandle Proud or .org website up and operational next week so that we can start promoting it. And we're going
we have big ideas.
We're going to have hoping to have a huge concert at the Moody Center.
Awesome.
With Texas musicians from the Panhandle that might come down and want to make a difference. And then we're going to mirror that concert at Texas Tech University State Football Stadium so that we can get close to the Panhandle. There's really no venue in Amarillo. I've looked already.
True.
So
anyway, we're this will be a year-long campaign. You know, it is evolving as we speak because it is all Texas distilleries coming together for a good cause. And, you know, we're proud to just have an opportunity to kind of put a little platform out there so that everybody can, you know, jump off of it and move forward and contribute back to, you know, to our great state.
So that's amazing. That philanthropic mindset is just makes me love the product that much more. I'm a details guy. My wife yells at me about it because she's like, I don't know how the hell you see that or how you see this, but everything about your bottle has a detail.
I'm a delighted bird.
Yeah, I'll take some. Poured by the man himself. Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Little details matter.
Well, let's talk about these details real quick because I don't know that anybody that takes the time to look at the band to actually look at the
That beautiful artwork.
Yeah. Look at the artwork in the star. I mean, everything about it, it's art. It justifies the cost for me. I mean, the bottle's beautiful. You had to have a heck of a team.
Pull the ladybird down.
Yeah,
grab that ladybird. Sorry, you know.
Absolutely.
Let's pour the really good stuff.
Did you notice I'm serving the lady fast, last?
Sure, fast.
Fast.
Salute.
Salute.
Anyway, the details of the bottle. You know, Dan is very creative, and Rob Cordes, who is our marketing director, does hand, literally, this is hand artwork that for every bottle, it is different. So, you know, we have a rainbow collection of expressions. Every wax is a different expression. Mm-hmm. And every bottle has a different layer of artwork. And again, I get, like you said, it's kind of that attention to detail. We want every bottle to be as special as the one before.
And since we're talking about bottles, we might as well go through the lineup on what's out there for... If you haven't tried Garrison, go find it. Try it, first off. But we'll go through kind of the lineup on what they have. Well, now, we love to drink the special bottles. That's just because that's how we roll. And, you know.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a core four.
You do. So tell us about the core four, and then we can jump into a couple of these special ones up there.
First of all, I hate the name core four, but it is what it is. If you are a restaurant and bar out there.
Throws me under the bus at every given opportunity. You know, I could be a founder, but that doesn't mean anything.
We're investing more in more production of the small batch bourbon, the honeydew bourbon, the single barrel bourbon, and the Balmoray than we are of everything else. Because we want to have a shining star at the very top of the basic behind the bar stuff. So if you're a bartender or beverage director here in Texas or around the world, around America, and you want to get some Lady Bird or some Laguna Madre, those are small allocations. There's only a couple of thousand bottles that are produced each year. So if you have the core four, then you can have access to these other ones as well. Mm-hmm. And we're not trying to be jerks about it, but we have to have some measure of what bars are giving back to us.
Yeah, well, who's selling enough of your product?
Well, and enough representation to then understand what a Laguna Madre or a Lady Bird, you know, or a Guadalupe is. I mean, you know, you kind of got to start somewhere and you kind of got to start with the small batch. Yeah. So that 94 proof.
The most exotic of all we've talked about is high rye.
Yeah.
And, it's just very difficult to produce it. I mean, we have to break down our entire system. We're producing bourbon every day, 24 hours a day. Yep. We've got a night shift that works. We've got a day shift that works. We've got a night shift of bottlers that works. Day shift of bottlers that works. Volunteers. But to break it down and add rye into the mix totally screws up everything because it's very difficult to cook with. It foams up and it's really messy. We know how to do it. We thought that our rye that we introduced was pretty darn good. But to start again with rye is difficult. So we give Donis the luxury of deciding when he's going to do the high rye. He surprised the hell out of me when it first came out. I told him we're never doing a rye.
Yeah, this is true. But we always knew somewhere in the back of our mind that we were going to do a high rye. And we can't come from high Texas and not do a high rye.
Yeah.
So we knew that it was sort of floating out there. But, you know, Donis always has things in his pocket. And so...
for the not so uber educated bourbon drinkers out there, high rye means that it's going to be 51% corn because it's always going to be a bourbon.
A bourbon.
But the higher the rye content, the higher you can call it a high rye, and the lower the wheat or the barley. Is what probably going to be barley in our recipe. I think it's 51% corn, 35% barley, and the rest was all, I'm sorry, 35% rye, and the rest was all barley. I think that was the mash bill for the last one. But it's absolutely delicious. If you can find a bottle out there on the market, buy it, because...
he says if you can find
a bottle. And you know what? Please buy a legal bottle.
Yes.
This is what I say. You know, you never say never, but the reality is we're now in 50 states. So we have a lot of cases and pallets.
There's people in Oregon that have never heard of us to
move across this beautiful United States of America. And we need to stay focused on that right now. And limited releases are beautiful and wonderful and exciting and give us all something new to taste. But the reality is we still need to be able to fill all those orders across the 50 states that are out there.
So bills. Easy fix, we need another still.
All of our stills today are still in the original building. So, you know, I talked about from the ground up. We literally bought a piece of land with dirt and put a building on it. And that is the building where at one point with our beautiful little Copper Cow Girl, our 100-gallon pot still, we did everything. I mean, we built a greenhouse back in the day to better climate control during our fermentation process. You know, everything happened in those four walls. Today, we have a 2,000-gallon pot still. We actually have four stills that now sit in that little space, and we do tours through there. I mean, it's crazy to think how we have jerry-rigged everything to happen still in those four walls. I don't think we can put another still in there. I'm just saying.
Another building.
I always wanted to build Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
Well, that's I think we did.
I was there Sunday doing a single barrel, and I did hear that you pushed for a pool. And I hear that might be at some point.
Still pushing.
I have heard that might be coming at some point.
Yeah. How does that work in the business model? I'm not sure. But anyway.
Pools go hand in hand with bourbon.
Yeah.
We're going to need about 1,000 Oompa Loompas.
There you go.
You need to know how to clean a pool.
There you go.
You know, talking about your grounds, and I touched on this before, but for those of you that are outside of Texas or even those that are in Texas that haven't made this trip to High to visit this distillery, I've been to a lot of them. Nick's been to far more than I have. I still feel like Garrison Brothers is one of my favorites from start to finish, from the experience of it, from the people that work there, to just the location. High Texas is absolutely beautiful. I mean, I've had the opportunity to see sunsets out there at the state competitions and stuff like that. And
that was a great night.
It really was.
It's coming back.
It's coming back.
Yep. So of all the events you do and everything out there, visit High Texas, visit Garrison Brothers. Check these guys out because honestly, it's one of my favorites out there. I know it's Dave's absolute favorite. And Nick, you're a fan too. You got a whole bunch back there on the shelf. So, you know,
nothing with green wax.
Nothing with green wax. What's going on with that?
I feel like it's a challenge. So give me a couple days. I'll make some calls.
But we've got some beautiful Guadalupe back there. And I assume there might be a bottle of Guadalupe 2024.
Just released. And then there's one of the original.
Yep. So. Nice.
The 24 so far has been my favorite. Yep. I think it's your favorite.
It's so good. I get pecans and butterscotch. It's just so good.
Yep.
So good.
Well, we joke because obviously Nick finds a lot of things.
He does.
You have a few bourbons behind me.
And COVID was really slow.
Yeah.
And so I had nothing else to do. I was furloughed from work. And so I just started drinking bourbon. And then it just got out of hand.
I said bourbon cured COVID. I told my wife. I've told you, Nancy, my wife's a big bourbon drinker as well. And that kind of came out of this whole COVID thing, too.
Yep.
I was going through bourbon during COVID because there's nothing else to do. I'm saying, you know, I'm going to kill COVID because I'm going to drink high proof bourbon.
I'm
a proof whore. I love high proof stuff. So, you know, I got the 140s out. I'm drinking. I'm like, screw off COVID. You're not going to touch me.
Yeah.
So I had a pour every day and, you know, going through. And my wife's like, what are you drinking? I'll take a taste. Then it turned into this is good. This is good. This is good. Now yeah.
you converted one.
Has the yeah. same appreciation. Like I said, yeah. she loved the Ladybird as well.
Thank you.
I think it's just one of those things that once you dive in and once you start to appreciate it, you turn into Nick eventually.
Don't know if that's a compliment or a dig.
It is not.
It's just a statement.
It is not, because your collection, I felt good about my collection at my house until I met Nick. And then I didn't feel good anymore.
Okay, I'm just compensating for all my other problems.
Well, Dan and I will both say that we've stayed pretty damn healthy all through 2020 COVID. And on. And I'm not sure that a little good bourbon along the way didn't help in that.
Yeah. I think it does. I truly think there are long-term benefits. I've talked to the World War II vets.
Oh.
I've talked to family members, you know, older guys. I've talked to several people that are in their late 90s that will have a pour or two mm-hmm. every single day.
If it was just a pour or two, but anyway, that's
excess can get a little crazy.
I mean, so let's start. Y'all know Robert Mondavi, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the story behind him is he drank two bottles of wine every single day. Lived well into his 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, so there is benefit to all of this stuff. Now, you're not supposed to take it to what, intemperance. Is that the whole rule? I get yelled at by the people that.
You know,
well,
everything
was a church
in moderation.
I got in trouble
for that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Or
were
you doing a church?
Drinking
boot
flask. If it's right there. Yeah.
A little bit of boot flask goes a long way.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I catch hell about all the pours I do anymore. Yeah. And they're like, oh, that's a Steve pour. But I think the perfect pour in a Glen is truly 1.75 ounces. But for me, it's got to be about right there.
I got to drink small batch with a 105-year-old woman in a wheelchair the other day at the Whiskey Shack.
That had to be amazing.
She was visiting the distillery.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's awesome.
She's taking like a champ, too, I'm sure.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah. Awesome. You know, that age.
105, you're good.
Yeah.
I said, so can I recommend how to drink it? She said, Sonny, you don't get to tell me how to drink it.
You stay in your lane, yes, which ma'am. You're a youngster. Yeah.
No. No, but anyway. Truly, and I'll let you guys chime in too. I've been running my mouth this whole damn time, but I love what you're doing. You know, I appreciate it. Keep it up.
Thank you.
Keep doing good for the community.
Thank you.
And just keep doing what you're doing, because I mean, everything that comes out is great. We really enjoy it. I mean, do you have anything to add on that?
Just the grounds in general and going out there, and then the single barrel program that y'all have too, and just how y'all treat your guests that come in is just, it's amazing. It's really a great time just to be out there.
Thank you.
And so
y'all have been very generous hosts.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun. Anytime.
Always.
You know, I mean, Dan and I are so blessed. You know, we get to be together. We get to do these opportunities to meet new friends and drink good bourbon. And it's incredible.
And
we're blessed.
At that, we all realize that good bourbon can change the world. So, yeah. You know,
and it brings people together.
Yeah, it sure does.
Before we conclude.
We're not. Yeah,
I just want to make sure that our publicist told you about the appearance fees.
Yeah. Well, she told me that
it's like a half bottle of Balmerac.
It's done. It's good.
Let me dump this back.
As long as it's not Guadalupe, you're fine.
I can refill it with something else. Yeah. I got some nice tea in the fridge.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
No, that's but we do. We appreciate y'all. Keep doing great for the community.
Thank you.
Keep turning out beautiful bourbon. We'll always be big fans. If you have questions, hit us in the comments. Mm-hmm. Let us know. I'm happy to blow Dan's cell phone up and let him know, you know, hey, somebody wants to know this
question.
But we may be able to get some answers to your questions. Feel free to ask
them. We'll come back anytime.
Hey, we really appreciate
it. Get out to the distillery. Go see the people. Go see the grounds.
Get on the list to work there, because it's the only time you go to work, and it's actually, it doesn't suck to go to work.
Don't stick your hand in the wax containers.
Don't put any body parts in the wax.
No parts in the wax.
On the body parts.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the number one key. So
you get it a couple times when you're out there.
I was looking at this star, and I was concerned about the quality control piece of it.
I've looked at a few of them. I always try and check to see. I'm like, I don't know.
How did this get passed?
That should have.
You hear that, but you just saw his first couple. It was pretty rough.
My first few of the morning are always rough. Like, I'll get in there and they're like, have you done this before? Well, like, shut up, I've been here 20 times.
We have a triage section,
and they're really
good. And so, you know, we can correct most mistakes along the way.
It's a great time.
I mean, it really is. I mean, it's great forearm workout. Sit there and hold the bottle.
For a Texas media company, podcast, whiskey company, you know, to have really
what I think is the top of Texas bourbon and Texas whiskey.
Thank you to have y'all here
and hang out with us and share some stories really means a lot.
Right. We appreciate it. If y'all want to come bottle with us, just go to the website and click on sign up or send an email to nancy@garrisonbros.com.
It's going to get blown up for Nancy.
Thank you so much. Or dan@garrisonbros.com.
If you want to take it, you can sign up, make a reservation in advance because they'll fill up really quickly.
But it takes about 30 seconds. So
we'll make sure we post a link for y'all too where you can sign up.
And sign up for bottling too. Please post that link, we'd be thrilled.
You get an amazing lunch. I mean, the food, it's just
you get breakfast, you get a food class, you get a t-shirt. I mean, life's like
Chef Jack is amazing.
Oh my gosh,
his team.
Best food. We didn't even talk about the food out there.
Chef Jack and his team are incredible. They, what they put out of that kitchen, and you know, as of last week, we are finally moving into a conditioned space for our kitchen, but previously, it literally was all done out of a shack.
Wow.
Everything we did. So we are honored to be able to give give back to Chef Jack and his team because he has an incredible group of guys that are with him putting out amazing food every day.
I get a test of that Sunday. I had fried chicken.
Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry.
If you bought a bottle of Garrison Brothers, God bless your sorry ass. Yeah. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, cheers, y'all.
Thank you.